I would like to immediately follow from Jane Stroop's introduction and say that while new urbanism does not represent in its present form a perfect solution, it is a solution in the right direction and the first intelligent break away from this unsustainable type of suburban sprawl that we saw after the Second World War. And don't forget that new urbanism has two different faces. First, new urbanism tries to humanize the suburban sprawl, which is unsustainable. But the other phase of new urbanism is against these monotonous social housing blocks that are so inhuman. Both these things defined post-war building, and to a great extent, the social housing blocks were a terrible disaster. Because they represent a geometry that really isolates human beings and puts them in a prison, and is based not on any derived rules for good human habitat, but on certain images propagated in Germany in the early 1920s that were then imported along with some of the modernist architects who claimed to be fleeing the Nazis, but in fact left for the United States because they could no longer find commissions, and they were very happy to work with the Nazis if they had continued to find commissions. So new urbanism has done one remarkable thing. My new urbanist friends have the smart code, which is a type of code that allows mixed-use density and more human dimensions for new construction, and that can be voted upon by a municipality to be an alternative to the present zoning. Now, I think everyone would agree with me that the present zoning really defines a not a very human society because it has unnecessary separation of functions. And an alternative to that is already present in the smart growth. All it takes is one municipality to vote that a smart new urbanist code can be used by any developer or by the city as an option, not as a top-down authoritative measure. So somebody has the option to do that, and the results are invariably better. Now I have to address the very real concerns that built new urbanist environments have not succeeded entirely. Well, there is more to urbanism than new urbanism. New urbanism still is focused upon the visual and geometrical aspects, but the city is more than that. The city is a dynamic network. And here, my friends and I have developed the network city, which is a mathematical, a topological study of the city, and that's where the new urbanists are not, because the new urbanists come from architecture. All the new urbanists are very good architects, but they come from architecture. Whereas my friends and I come from the sciences and come from also geography, the geography departments. So the network city studies how a city actually functions. And for example, turning a street, that a vehicular street into a pedestrian street without an analysis of the flux through that street can destroy that area of town. In very few cases is it justified to turn a functioning vehicular street into a pedestrian street. What can be done is the partition of the street to allow both access of vehicles and pedestrians. The opposite of what the United States implemented after the Second World War, where there were streets that were very accommodating for both pedestrians and vehicles, and then because of the misguided modernist type of zoning, the pedestrian part was erased so that you turn this into a purely vehicular street, and that cuts the network of pedestrian connections. This was a tremendous damage to our cities. Now, the damage can be reversed, not by going from one extreme to the other, but by studying the flux and the flows. Now, it happens in geometry, in the geography departments. There are people who, over the last 30 years, have been doing observations via satellites and have been processing all this data. So the science is there. It just happens that planning departments are not aware of this research, are not aware of the results. If you go to architecture school, forget it. They're still stuck back in the 1920s with their old dogmas. So there needs to be a communication between people who have the solutions today and people who can apply them. Now, some of my new urbanist friends, of course, I include myself among the new urbanists. Some of my new urbanist friends do have this connection, and their projects tend to be much more successful than other projects that merely superficially copy old style small towns, and then they build them and they don't work like small towns because the connections and the network connectivity is simply not there. But this is again a sad inheritance from the architects looking at the city purely as a stylistic statement, as a visual style. If we build it and it sort of looks traditional, it's going to work that way. No, a city is a complex system, and you need to understand the mathematics of a complex system, otherwise you're going to make a mess of it, as we have made so many messes with our interventions today. Now, let me raise a red flag of warning, because now we have been discussing fairly good interventions that don't succeed 100%. But what are the real interventions occurring in cities today? Some government agency or mayor will invite a star architect and will pay them millions and millions of dollars and will say, you build a new building here, it's going to revitalize the city. Well, they erect a monstrosity that kills the circulations around it. It is inhuman to look at. It is inhuman to enter and to work in, or if it's an art museum, it makes people sick when they go inside. So, and this is supposed to upgrade a city. And I won't cite any examples, but just going outside this hotel, you can see one or two of such monstrosities. And unfortunately, the city of Cincinnati is very proud of such monstrosities, even though they failed to work for what they were promised. There is, however, a uniform praise in the press until somebody realizes that the press is acting the same way when they describe architecture as when they describe culture and contemporary art. Namely, what we in this room consider absolute garbage is praised by the press as being brilliant works of art. So it's the same with architectural statements. And I hope that people in this room who are involved with various organizations can focus upon this tremendous propaganda campaign that has been occurring for the last several decades to show that this type of intervention is destructive to city life. There's another type of intervention that I want to mention, which is what I'm supposed to be speaking on, urban spaces. And urban spaces exist in pre-World War II cities, and sometimes they run down, and there are certain techniques for upgrading that urban space. Those techniques have to do more with the network connectivity about who occupies the surrounding eight blocks of those spaces, and very little to do with the actual physical structure of the space. Okay, most of the spaces are pretty good. What happens, unfortunately, is that governments that don't understand about the dynamics of urban space will invite some architects, famous or not famous, and they will come in and spend a lot of money and redo the space. And nothing happens except that the space becomes more ugly. They may put all concrete or some horrible, monstrous, abstract sculpture in the middle that will drive people away. In the belief, because they believe still in the Bauhaus visual images that doing this is good and people like it. Well, people don't like it. I mean, we have scientific evidence that people don't like it because it makes them feel anxious, biologically anxious, and we have measurements of the biological of the physiological responses to the preferred surfaces and the preferred geometries that the modernist, postmodernist, and deconstructivist architects apply, and they create anxiety, physical anxiety, and they can make you sick. So people flee and avoid these spaces. Now, the senator is laughing, but it is no laughing matter, and this is why it's not a laughing matter. The literature is full of articles based on medical research by doctors, not by architects. They are out there, they're available. Architects totally ignore this, and they go and they do the same thing over and over and over again. Even hospitals are built in a modernist, postmodernist, deconstructivist style, even though we know that the healing rates, post-operative healing rates vary. They can vary by up to 50% faster in a more traditional environment that has contact with nature. And yet hospitals in this country continue to be built in the oppressive sort of a machine style. Now, the Swedish government has picked up on this and 3 years ago has issued a national code for new hospitals where they are required to obey certain geometrical criteria and to interweave with nature as closely as possible because of these findings. Now, if the Food and Drug Administration came out with a study saying that doing this improves your health and doing the opposite leads to a 50% reduction of health, it will be all over the newspapers. Yet, as far as I know, no architect knows about all this research that my friends and I are involved with. So this is the topic of biophilia that includes these studies. And going away from just pure contact with nature, we have biophilia as expressed in materials, namely copying the intricate and complex geometry that arises from natural forms, what we have been talking about in the entire conference, in order to represent something that is abstract and not necessarily a copy of nature. This room is an example of biophilia because it has this intricate complexity so that we feel very peaceful and nourished by the geometry of this room. And we cannot explain it because it is subconscious, but we feel that. Now, I would like to close with a dire warning. I have heard more than on one occasion during this conference the hope, I think it's a very naive hope, that because we have buildings like this, we're okay because people will recognize real beauty. I'm sorry, but I totally disagree with that statement. I happen to go in and out of architectural circles. And they have buildings like this on the blacklist to be demolished, just like planners had Boston's historic districts on the list to be demolished, because this does not concord with ideal images and the ideology of nihilism that reigns today in architectural circles. So that architects trained in architecture schools of the last 30 years come into this room and they cringe and they say, this has to be destroyed, because it represents the opposite of what we are trying to build. So it is a drive to exterminate the last remaining pieces of vibrant, lifelike architecture. And if you don't believe me, just go around, walk around Cincinnati and look up. And you see wonderful buildings from anywhere from the last century to the 1930s. And then you look down and you see the street level has been gutted. And it looks like a strip mall in some nondescript place. That was intentional because here is an ideal of beauty that is nihilistic and that is opposite and opposed to real beauty, which is coming from tradition and is coming from biology. So I would like to close by an appeal to young people. Our generation has failed because we have been asleep on our watch. We have allowed a nihilistic cult to take over the architecture schools, and now it is tied in with vast money interests who make a living from the so-called contemporary art scene and from this architect culture. And I'm ashamed to say major construction companies that collaborate with the evil of the star architects, and they make a good profit, but at the expense of our culture. And we are leaving this can of worms to you, for you to solve, because we have been unable to solve it. So you need to solve it, and you need to find tools for combating this after we have allowed it to grow to become a monster. Because at the moment, there are so many architecture schools in the United States, in Britain, in Europe, only one teaches human architecture, and that's the University of Notre Dame. And there used to be a second one was founded in Portugal by my friends, and the dean was José Cornelio da Silva, and it was closed down after 1 year. And the faculty were fired, and the students were told, either you study modernist architecture or you're out of here. And half of them stayed, and the other half were out. So that was the coup d'etat in Viseu, and the people were so terrified after that happened that they even refused to write about it. And I had to write about it from San Antonio to denounce the coup d'etat, closing down the second architecture school of human architecture in the world. So now there is none. And I'm sorry to say, this is the world that these young people are inheriting, and they may not be interested in architecture, but this is just the tip of the iceberg, because architecture is linked in to the so-called contemporary art scene, and it's linked in to the desecration of all the humanities in the academy that have been displaced by nonsensical theories of Derrida and the French post-structuralists. And now it is extremely difficult for a young person to get an education about the culture. And I'm not talking about only Western culture. Western culture is desecrated. But the Eastern people who have culture also feel the threat. And I will raise a warning. The Eastern people in the rest of the world feel the threat to their own culture coming from whom? From the United States, us. And we are here trying to defend Western culture, but those people in other cultures see the United States from the face of the major newspapers, and the major newspapers are promoting the nihilistic anti-culture. That is the face of the United States that we are presenting to the world, I am sorry to say. And unless we do, I mean, we people who understand the beauty of America, because America is a beautiful country, we understand the beauty of America and change that message, then we spike the hatred of the world for something that we didn't do, other people are doing today in order to support their nihilistic cult. I think I will stop here. Thank you very much.